Reading FC delivered their trademark last gasp defeat on Saturday to compound arguably the worst fortnight in the club's recent memory. After an FA Cup upset and 7-0 drubbing, this late show against Middlesbrough was followed by the captain being stripped of the armband, having asked to leave the club. Welcome to the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode 286. And I'm not sure we've ever had this much to cover on the back of a simple week of football. But here we are. I'm your host, Mark Mayer. Ollie Allen joining us this week, one of two of the finest Reading minds we got with us. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. I've just seen it's Blue Monday, officially the most depressing day of the year, which seems quite apt for another rather depressing week of Reading Football Club.
No doubt, Westy as well with us. I'm sure you'll bring us some New Year cheer, mate.
Well, we tried to. At least we've had a little bit of time to reflect on it rather than the emotional state that I think I was in Tuesday, like everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's plenty to get into with that Fulham defeat as well, which we haven't covered quite yet because that came in midweek. And then the Liam Moore captaincy stuff. We'll get into all of that in the recap in just a second. Beforehand, a big thank you, as always, to our Patreon subscribers and ZCZ Films, our sponsor. Well, come on then. Let's get into it. Let's do the recap for Reading FC this week.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, we started the week with a pretty innocuous 7-0 drubbing at the hands of Fulham. Everyone obviously follows the club will be well on top of how this unfolded. I'm not going to spend us ages getting into the kind of details of the performance and everything like that. Looking back on it, Westy, as you're saying, quite emotional on Tuesday night after this. How does it feel kind of 6 days on as this game has now kind of faded into history a bit?
Still hugely disappointing. I mean, I think, I don't know if you guys were there for the last time we got spanked at home against Bristol Rovers with Curran and Robertson getting on the score sheet. I was there for that one. I stayed for the full 90 minutes for that game and I had to stay for the full 90 minutes of this one. I think I like punishing myself, I guess. But like everybody else in the ground, it was just a second half capitulation of the players that didn't look like was putting much effort in, especially when that third goal went in. But again, Scott Dan's gone off injured first 10, 15 minutes and you think, how can the injury list get any worse? But it continues to dumbfound medical science, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure the people who have been sorting out the pandemic and everything like that, the science, they could do with a good look at the Reading FC injury room, because there is certainly some, as you say, it's not quite what you'd expect, not quite what scientific logic dictates, is it, that Reading just keep having these things happen to them. And Ollie, we've seen Fulham have actually done it already to Blackburn this season. It's one of those things where you basically just get a team that are doing it for fun at that point, and a Reading team that's a bit inexperienced, probably very half-hearted, just doesn't really know what to do. I suppose what I would say is the most disappointing thing is the amount of mistakes that led to goals, because not all of these goals were, I can't think of any that were world-class bits of football, and yet we kind of gifted them a bit too many, didn't we?
Yeah, particularly the first two. And really, I think that's the thing. I think that penalty that comes just before half-time, I think if you go in at half-time 1-0 down, and obviously that first goal is an error where Josh Lawrence just sort of blindly plays it back across goal, not really knowing where Luke Southwood is, and then Harry Wilson gets a very, very easy tap in. And that perhaps comes from obviously Lauren not being a natural centre back. But yeah, if you go into half time 1-0 down, you're thinking it's not actually that bad of a situation. And then the second half you can try and get back into it. But then yeah, that penalty just before half time is needlessly given away really by Tom Holmes. I think Harry Wilson is pretty much at the byline. He's not really going to salvage the ball, and Holmes just sticks a leg out and trips him up, and it's a blatant penalty. I think there were some questions over whether it was or whether it was soft. I mean, I was sat in the Eamon Dolan stand and sat right behind it, and it was a nailed on penalty. So yeah, and then obviously second half we just sort of collapsed. I think that is the most frustrating thing. I think you know that Fulham are going to come to the Medeski and play very well. They are one of the best sides in this division. But Reading don't help themselves, and yeah, that some of the goals second half, I think one of them was a corner where the defender gets a free header, possibly two. I think one of them, a corner's whipped in, Mitch, which is at the edge of the box, and he gets a free header to flick it back on into the box, and you're just thinking, this is Mitrovic, who is, you know, the best striker in this division. He's got 22 goals to his name this season, and you're leaving him completely unmarked on the edge of the box. So I think it's been the case a lot this season that the Reading have almost been masters of their own downfall. But yeah, Tuesday night was very, very painful. And it's, you know, you mentioned Blackburn. You know, Blackburn got beat 7-0 by Fulham and have now gone on some magical run and are third in the league. So I highly doubt that's going to happen with us. But there is a way back from it. But I think particularly in sort of this week that we've had the loss to Kidderminster, you know, it didn't feel as if it could get much worse after that. And then you follow up with a 7-0 home defeat, the club's biggest ever home defeat. And it's difficult really to sort of see a way back, certainly for Veljko Paunović from this. And I think obviously media reports saying that he's going to stay till the end of the season, but it doesn't, you know, seem as if fans are going to get back on his side, particularly after the last week that we've had.
Thing is, Ollie, I mean, again, I'll pick up what you just said there. It's like they're still making the same old mistakes all through the season. Like you just pointed out there, you've got Mitrovic, yeah, probably one of the best headers in the division, unmarked. And it wasn't on one or two occasions. It was constantly. And then, yeah, a few weeks before that, we played Gary Cahill, who's again, one of the best headers in the division. And he's completely unmarked across in the corner. And you think, well, come on, this is easy to pick up. If you've got good players who are good in the air, put someone on them. You know, we've got plenty of big guys in our side now, your Holmes and your Carrolls and your Laurents. So it's not difficult to pick up these players that are of danger to you, but they're not doing it. So they're making the same old mistakes every week.
And that, yeah, comes from that comes from an inexperienced defence. When Scott Dan goes off, and we'll speak about it for Middlesbrough as well, that defence is Ethan Bristow's got a handful of senior appearances to his name. Dejan Tetek, who's naturally a midfielder at right back. Josh Laurent, who, as I say, made that mistake in the first half, is a midfielder. And Tom Holmes, who, yes, has sort of made sort of 50 appearances now, but is still very, very early on in his career. So that's what happens when you have a very inexperienced, not a natural defence coming up against, you know, the best attack in the division.
Yeah, I thought also they targeted our fullbacks all through that game because Bristow in that team way too early for his development. I feel sorry for him really because it's a baptism of fire that he doesn't need. And obviously it won't reflect well on him if they keep conceding a lot of goals and they're attacking the fullbacks and they're giving them all sorts of problems. But it's not their fault. I mean, they shouldn't be in the team at this stage really, should they?
Yeah, and this is the thing with the Middlesbrough game as well. Because I mean, in normal circumstances, we could probably do an entire podcast on this 7-0 defeat and go through all the goals and all that sort of stuff and what it means for the club. I mean, the only thing that I can add on afterwards is that if Veljko Paunović obviously wasn't sacked after that game, you kind of wonder, is he ever, as you say, Ollie, the media report says he's going to see out the season. What can he be sacked after now? Because it won't get worse than a Kidderminster and a Fulham in the way that it's happened. And then we go to Middlesbrough, and again, it's Bristow left-back, Tetek right-back. Josh Laurent is this kind of centre-back. And, you know, Laurent, he played well. He's done that before. He's a versatile player, can do a job there. But Bristow in particular, absolutely targeted at Middlesbrough. And it was balls into the box that were Reading's downfall again. The thing with the, I mean, for the goals, I guess for the Middlesbrough goals, I guess the second one, you could probably say Tetek's a bit guilty of not following his man. I'm kind of loath to criticise the individuals though for the Middlesbrough goals because, you know, as we've said, these guys aren't playing in A, their natural position, or B, in a league that they're very experienced in. The thing that I want to ask about though, and Ollie, I'll start with you for this, is Veljko Paunović kind of had an idea that Reading were hard done by in this game. And having taken the lead with the Andy Carroll header, then the two goals, I think it's 87 and 95 minutes that Reading deserve better than that. Do you think that's a fair reflection, or do you think this is a manager who's kind of clutching at straws a little bit?
He's been clutching at straws for about 3 or 4 weeks at this point. He's trying to find anything that will sort of justify what's happened on the pitch. And I think that's what's almost infuriating to fans. I think the performances and the results have sort of lost Veljko Paunović's support. But I also think this sort of blind sort of optimism, I suppose, or just sort of not willing to take any sort of blame or acceptance for the result, or sort of saying that he made mistakes. And, you know, yes, Reading, you know, were probably, you know, worthy of their lead. But if you can't see out that lead, then you don't deserve to win the game. And as you say, the two goals that Reading conceded against Barrow were soft, and again, that they both come from Matt Crooks, who, you know, you have to know it is a danger. You know, he's 6 foot, you know, 6 foot 4, 6 foot 5, and you know they're going to put balls into the box, particularly if it's late on. That's always going to be, you know, the best tactic for them. Ethan Brister does get beat far too easily at his near post. Just sort of gets beat too easily in general for that second goal. But yeah, there isn't. We're getting to a point now where there's not really much defence for this, because this isn't a one-off that Reading are letting Leeds slip. You know, it's happened far, far too often now this season. You can recall them off, you know, so easily. You know, Blackpool, QPR, Kidderminster, Derby. You know, it's happening far, far too regularly that the Reading just losing points from winning positions, and you know that isn't anywhere near good enough. And it is frustrating, because I think probably no one really expected Reading to get anything from this game against Middlesbrough, because you know Borough they played very, very well since Chris Wilder come in, and they're sort of top six contenders now. But as always, it's always the nature of the defeats. You know, when you're winning 1-0 with 5 minutes to go, to get, you know, 1 point from the game is frustrating, but to get no points from the game is just unacceptable. And as I say, it's happened far too often this season that we're dropping points far, far too easily from winning positions.
Yeah, the stats do say that we had 10 shots apiece. We only had 37% of possession, 5 corners. And Westy, I suppose it depends as to what you want to look at, because Paunovic in his post-match, and we'll listen to it in a bit, said that, you know, away to Swansea and away to Fulham and away to Cardiff and places, we did go and sit back and kind of absorb some pressure, and it paid off for us. But the amount of times that we've now absorbed pressure and it's not gone for us is just growing more and more. And we've had managers in the past, I think of Jaap Stam in particular, who were so glued to one system that as soon as that system stopped working, they were kind of stuck and they didn't know what to do. It feels weird that Paunovic is glued to this system, because last season I don't remember us being a team that kind of sat back and absorbed pressure, and yet this season we've done it, and he's being stubborn in sticking to it no matter what.
Yeah, he is. And as we've already pointed out, and we've all seen Reading over the course of the last two seasons, and Paunovic, at the moment, he hasn't got a defence that's particularly good at defending. So why do you think you're going to try and play out games when I think Middlesbrough, they knew exactly how to play against us at the end. They started chucking players forward. They knew we weren't going to be much threat to them over the top. Slightly different last year when we had Joe and Elise and players like Fit Richards who could get up the pitch. I think if you go at Reading, and I think Derby found this as well, and Blackpool did when they went 2-0 down to us, if you go at Reading, we've got very few answers. And I mean, Andy Carroll's been amazing for us, but you know that you're limited with Carroll, the fact that you've got to hit him, but then you've got to play off him. So you need runners to be running in behind him, and that's not happened. I think one good thing about the Middlesbrough game is they finally learned with Carroll up front what to do with the ball when you get wide. We've had years, I think, especially last year, that crosses into the box were usually pointless unless Maite was on the pitch, because there's not anyone else really that can head a ball. There's no midfielders that are good in the air. The strikers are certainly not great in the air. But with Carroll up front, you can lob a ball in like I did against Middlesbrough, and he will attack it, and he scored, obviously, a great goal. Going back to the Fulham game, he scored 2 great goals on that as well when the ball was played up to him. But you're not going to hit it over the top for him to run after. He got lucky with the Swansea goal, because I think we may well have been offside, but in general, he's not going to run after the ball. There's no point playing it over the top. So teams are thinking, especially when they're 2-0 down, and this is why we're giving Leeds away, is you think, well, if we stick a few extra up front, Reading ain't got a lot of answers, and we know they can't defend, so lob the ball in the box and see what happens. And we're conceding the same goals every single week. So why he thought he was going to try and play out a game against Middlesbrough when they threw everyone forward. Again, is it really his fault? Has he got the personnel there to bring on to try and shore that up? I mean, he's chucked Jow on at the end. And I see he was getting criticised for putting Jowell on and not defending properly, when last week there was fans complaining about being too defensive in the last 10, 15 minutes. He can't seem to win at the moment. So I do have some sympathy for him. What I was saying was Holmes and Dan, obviously when they're at the back, they're good headers of the ball. But when balls come in left, right and centre, we're conceding the same goals. And managers who watch us over any amount of time in the Championship will soon know that if you get some balls into the box, Reading will capitulate. And that's exactly what's happened week after week.
Yeah, I think the only thing I'd add for that is that it does seem like when you have players like Swift and Drinkwater, and even, you know, Carroll can be part of this, players like Zhao, Hoylett also capable of doing this, Halilovic as well. These are players who can put a foot on the ball, calm things down, steady it and move it around and not lose it at the back and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, this Holmes is a pretty decent centre back technically. Yeardon, Rahman, etc. When they're fit, they all of these players, even when they play, we still absorb the pressure. But it's those players are there; they are capable of putting a foot on the ball and calming things down. Big gamesmanship and all this sort of stuff. But Reading just aren't capable of doing it. And for me, that kind of, you know, that's when the management comes in, and that's when you've got to sort something out. And I mean, that was Saturday night for that game. And then Reading, ever desperate to be in the news, I think this was Saturday night as well, actually. A club statement came out. I'm sure that news in and of itself probably excited a lot of fans, but it wasn't actually to do with Paunovic or his future. It was to do with the future of Liam Moore, the captain. And I'm sure everyone's caught up on this, but if you've missed the news, it was that he's been stripped of the captaincy. Basically, paraphrasing here, but basically saying that he's asked to leave the club, had talks with Paunovic and the owner over the last few months, and the club effectively feel that he's not, him and his representatives haven't made any kind of serious movements towards him leaving the club, and that while this is the case and he wants to leave, he is not going to be captain. Whether he's going to play, I kind of doubt, but we don't actually know that at the moment. Obviously, this has sparked quite a lot of reaction on Twitter and everything like that. It's kind of hard to know what the overarching zeitgeist of the fans is at the moment. There seems to be a pretty decent divide between people saying that, you know, Moore is X, Y, and Z, not looking favourably on him, that the owners are messing around, that the club is kind of in a PR exercise. I mean, Ollie, for this one, what was your immediate reaction to this? And has that changed maybe over the couple of days since it happened?
Well, so I was actually out on Saturday night, so I didn't actually see the statements until probably about midnight on Saturday. I sort of turned my phone off after seeing that we conceded in the last minute and thought, okay, that's, you know, terrible day, but that'll be it for Reading today. And then turned it back on at midnight and yeah, just saw this baffling statement, really. It is very strange, and look, I think first and foremost we should say that I think probably all fans have been calling for sort of more clear and more direct communication from the football club, you know, pretty much since Dion has come in, and very rarely do we sort of get these sort of statements. So in that sense, I suppose it's good, but you know, I'd be fascinated to sort of see sort of who constructed it and sort of who signed it off, because it, as you say, it seems as if it is just a one big piece of PR for the football club and probably more specifically Dai Young. And, you know, and that shows in the fact that pretty much half the statement isn't actually about Liam Moore. You know, it's the first three paragraphs that are talking about Liam Moore and the whole situation there. But then they go on and say about how Dai Young is, you know, still committed to the football club financially and emotionally, and that Dubravka Panovic has still got his full backing. So, again, in isolation, you put that in a separate statement and you think, okay, that's fair enough, that's a good statement to put out, but you're putting it in this statement with Liam Moore. It's almost as if the club is sort of trying to split the fan base and sort of get the fan base on their side, you know, and turn the fans against Liam Moore, because, you know, again, there are always two sides to a story. We haven't heard Liam Moore's full version of events. Obviously, he reacted on Instagram on Saturday night, just very confused. I think there were 18 facepalm emojis on his Instagram story reacting to it. So, yeah, I think for me there are better ways of going about this. You know, this comes massively out of the blue, and it does seem as if this is just a very, very strange piece of PR from the club trying to get fans on their side and trying to turn them against Liam Moore. As I say, I think personally I'll reserve full judgment until more side of the story comes out. I think we have seen the last couple of years that, you know, Liam Moore is a player who, you know, he obviously asked to leave 3 or 4 years ago. As the club says, he's been handed one of the most significant contracts in the club's history, pretty much. And he's always been someone who's sort of divided the fan base with his performances on the pitch. So I think we'll have to wait and see and come out. I think there's plenty more to come out from this. And obviously, you know, you're left with a situation that if Liam Moore doesn't leave the club, you know, in this window, and that's clearly what this statement is trying to do. It's trying to, you know, get him to you know, leave, essentially, because he said he wants to leave. The club are saying they've had no offers, so they're almost trying to force his hand and, you know, go and get a move, essentially. But, you know, you're left in a very, very tricky situation here, where if Liam Moore is still here in 2 weeks' time, gone deadline day, then you're left with almost a very disruptive influence. And I think Liam Moore, as club captain, yes, he divides opinion amongst fans, but I think he's held very, very highly by his teammates. I think a lot of young players in particular will look up to Liam Moore. So I think, you know, this sort of publicly sort of hanging him out to dry could have very, very negative consequences. And it's the last thing that the Reading need in everything that's going on at the moment.
Well, fair play for counting up the facepalm emojis, 18. That's the in-depth knowledge that we strive to provide on this podcast. This is the thing, is that on one hand, I would like to talk about the factual statement of Liam Moore leaving as captain. And on the other hand, I think you're right, you do have to kind of address the overarching sense of it. I mean, let's start with Moore first. My sense of him as a player is that he's good when the team is good, and when the team isn't great, he's abysmal. And that's the thing with Liam Moore as a player. As a captain, I mean, I think you're right, there's probably a good sense of him being, probably generally speaking, a decent or right bloke. He's never seemed to be someone who is like arrogant or whatever. Hopefully that is the truth. In terms of his on-pitch leadership, I think we've always, as fans, had doubts about that because of the sort of things that, you know, the team has been mentally weak for a good few years now while he's been captain. I suppose the other thing that I'd say about is, Westy, there was a lot of sentiment online after the statement that was angry at Liam Moore for wanting to leave. Now, personally, I kind of think that he should be leaving because the club and the player, we all need to move on because it's just not working out at the moment. But I can totally understand the sense that we are in a massive fight at the moment for our survival as both kind of as a club and as a team. And you want your captain to be willing to stick around at least till the end of the season in that.
Yeah, I want to take this back a couple of weeks, actually, because my friend Paul tweeted on Saturday, and I thought it was quite true what he put. He put a few weeks back, I think if we remember this, the Kidderminster game, Valko Panovic pointed at the fact that some players, he wanted to pick a stronger team, but there was forces outside of his control. And it was a bit of a cryptic clue. Now, putting two and two together, I'm probably getting five. And maybe this was about this rumbling on in the background. Now, it's for Moore himself, we want to just deal with Moore to start with. If you're a player that's on 35 grand a week, reportedly, or however much it is, he's the best player paid in the club, he's going to find it very difficult to get another club that's willing to pay that money, because let's face it, he's at his level. We probably could have got 10 million for him at some point, but he's nowhere near worth that now. So he's going to have a big struggle to get out of this club. Now, if you're having a conversation behind closed doors, and let's just say this happened, which it clearly did in some form, and Liam Moore's gone to the manager and say, look, I don't want to be here beyond this season, then as a player that can see what we can all see coming, could you really blame him for looking for a move at 28 years old where he can get to a better club, maybe win something, maybe get into the Premier League? As an individual, I don't think you can say, you know what, that's disgraceful. But that sort of conversation should be, if this happened, it should be behind closed doors. And actually, I'll play till the end of the season, more than happy to. But after that, when the summer comes, I'm going to be looking to leave the club. Yeah, you couldn't have. I don't think anyone sat listening to this podcast could disagree with a guy who's been here for over 200 league games, wanting to leave and further his career, knowing what we can all see coming next season. But if he's gone in there and demanded a move and said, look, this ain't working out, I want to leave in January, then you can understand that the people at the club were a little bit upset with the fact that we've got a serious injury crisis, we could get relegated, and the captain's trying to jump ship. It's for the club, let's face it, they've done this before. We had Gareth McCleary and Chris Gunter that were pretty much forced out of the club because they was on big wages. Now, whether this is a case of the club trying to force him out because, let's face it, he takes a lot of wage and we could probably do it in wages to improve our side rather than keep him, or it's Liam Moore demanding to leave in January, I think, like Ollie said, you'd have to know where this has come from. It doesn't look good, and I don't think it looked good on anybody, but it should have been a conversation that was left behind closed doors. I mean, let's face it, if he'd have gone in January and they'd have sold him and got 2 or 3 million, I don't think anyone would have been too worried. But now it just looks like he's forced to move, or the club are forcing him out. And either way, like you said, we have to listen to the whole story to get where this has come from.
Yeah, and this is the thing. When it comes to the thing about him wanting to leave in January is, even if he can't leave in January and the club feel he can't keep on as captain, that calls into doubt his professionalism, doesn't it? And that, as a captain, I think that is quite damning, if that is true. From the club, I do. The onus is on the club now, basically. It, as much as the club can say, we, you know, we want you, the representatives, to be doing X, Y, or Z, the onus is on the club to now find someone to buy him, someone, and accept a bid for him, because they've had countless times where they've not accepted bids for players such as Moore. Danny Loader had a medical at Wolves and that was called off at the last minute because the club wanted more money. We've had John Swift potentially might have left a few seasons ago. That was called off, although that looks to be the right decision. The club has to know how to get rid of these players, has to move on these players, learn how to turn over a squad without players like, you know, Danny Loader leaving on free, John Swift leaving on a free in the summer. That is where the emphasis is on the club now. And Liam Moore can only do so much. If a, maybe a, who knows, maybe a transfer bid has landed in the last few weeks and Reading have rejected it because they feel it's not enough. These are the sort of questions that we have. And I suppose, Ollie, moving forward, we're now just kind of in a state of flux, really, because as fans, we've now heard, yeah, as we said, one side of the story. But even if we hear Moore's side of the story, unless he goes or we have some sort of like miraculous reparation, this is just going to be like a big elephant in the room, isn't it?
I think it's the last thing the club needs. You know, the club is in, you know, enough of a mess as it is at the moment with without this going on. And as I say, if Moore is still here beyond the end of the transfer window, then you're left with, you know, a fairly disruptive influence here for the rest of the season. And, you know, you would hope that if Moore does stay at the club, it, you know, doesn't find a way out, then he, obviously not as current captain, but as one of the more experienced players in the team and, you know, someone who I would like to think, you know, sort of appreciates that, you know, that the situation the club is in and, you know, knows the club better than most players in this current squad, having been here for 5.5 years now, he would, you know, knuckle down, because ultimately he is, you know, if Scott Dann is out injured for a long time, you know, Michael Morrison is still not back yet. Liam Moore is still, you know, first choice centre back at this football club. I think we might well have seen the last of him sort of in a Reading shirt. But as you say, we're left with this conundrum that if there is no way out, and as Wesley says, his wages are so high, he's going to have to take a pay cut probably to move somewhere. It's a very, very difficult situation. I think there are probably clubs in this division, you know, that would sign him. I think he is a decent enough option at this level. But it is those wages and how much Reading are prepared to sort of get for him. I think his contract runs, I think, even till next year or possibly even the year after. So they are going to want to get a decent fee for him, particularly, you know, sort of given how we need to get money into the football club. So, yeah, as I say, it's the last thing the club needs. You know, the club is in enough of a mess as it is at the moment without all this going on. And it's just another sort of footnote, really, in this very, very miserable, sorry season.
The thing is, as well, Ollie, the thing is, they've made it impossible for him to play now, haven't they? Because even if he comes back into the side, as soon as he makes a mistake, you can bet that 50% of the people in that ground will be on his back super fast. And it's just made it impossible for him to play for Reading ever again, I think.
Yeah, I think also this has happened before, hasn't it? Fans know that he's already asked to leave the club once when we signed him on this new contract that is supposedly, you know, 30 grand a week or whatever. And now he's come and asked again. So I suppose for that it is a sense that the bridges have been burned now. And hopefully, I mean, we'll obviously get onto this in the mailbag because there's a few questions on it. But hopefully the only thing that really can work now is that he is sold quickly and things move on. And if he comes out and hopefully, you know, if Liam does leave, then he'll come out and say that, you know what, his end to the club wasn't what he wanted, but he wanted to move on and that he has a respect for the fans, yada, yada, yada. And then we kind of get on from that. But that's, you know, hopefully that's what's to come, because if he's still here in 2 weeks' time after deadline, then that's really not going to work for either party, is it? Let's hear from Veljko Paradovic after the Middlesbrough game. Then we'll go into the mailbag.
Football was cruel to us today. I think I was impressed how quickly we re-established our spirit and our identity. Again, we were a team like we were previously in away games like Fulham, like Swansea, like Cardiff. We looked like the same team today. Fortunately, we conceded two goals, late goals, obviously mistakes happen. We gotta keep working towards fixing them. We need immediate solutions. We need immediate actions, and we're gonna keep fighting. We go back Wednesday again, and we will reestablish again our team and the winning streak, which is still to come.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
So, a huge mailbag this week, probably the largest one I've ever seen, actually. But obviously, we spent a lot of time on the Moore thing already, so might keep our answers somewhat quick so that we're not making people listen to this thing for about 2 hours. But Groensy saying, will the club exist in 2 years' time? I'm not joking. Jeff H saying, does anyone know the details of the other clubs who went bust under the dyes? And are we heading that way? Wilbo Swags saying, when we're getting pummeled playing the under-16s in League One next year, will that be rock bottom or is there worse still to come? Now, Westy, from your time, you were talking earlier about the Bristol Rovers defeat. How does this compare to the kind of the days kind of, I guess, almost pre-Pardew, where this is the most similar to, and there was the pants day and all that sort of stuff, when the club did seem for a little while like it was actually on the verge of heading in the complete opposite direction to which it eventually did go. How does this compare to that sort of period and other periods that you can remember for this?
I could genuinely say that I think for a ticking time bomb, this is possibly the worst I've ever seen as a Reading fan. I've been going for, 40 years now. So even when Bullivan said that he didn't mind going back to the taxis after we got the sack at Reading, even compared to that, this is probably the worst. And I think the reason it's the worst is because we can all see that next year, and I've said it every time I've been on this podcast, this season, next year looks like it's going to be horrendous for Reading FC. All our loan players will disappear. Everyone's out of contract. You can't see anyone staying. So if we don't stay up this year, genuinely looking at next year at the moment, we look like we might well get relegated next year anyway. So it's a ticking time bomb, and I think we can all see the end to it. And no one wants to get... I mean, I heard someone say, well, if we get out of the Championship, go to League One, reset. It doesn't work like that. You know, you'll lose your sort of star young players. The whole team's going to be broken up. We might end up staying in League One, League Two for 10, 15, 20 years. Sunderland didn't come back too quickly. We have other teams that have disappeared down the league structure, and it wouldn't be a surprise if it happened to us. Now, what concerns me more than anything is this growing sort of feeling towards the owners. What we know, anyhow, as fans, is that we're seriously in debt to these owners. I think they own the ground, they own the training ground. And we can't even say that they haven't put money in because they've bought us an £8 million striker. I think the problem with the owners at the moment is decision-making. And you touched on there with players not getting sold when they was at the height, you know, £10 million for more, really, in hindsight, should have been sold. They were letting the league say players that would go for nothing. We're going to have a load of players like Swift disappearing again for nothing. It's just the decision-making at the top that seems to be really poor at the moment. But I would be very concerned if the fans started turning on the owners, because if they did decide to pull the plug, then we are in serious trouble. So for that, I think this is possibly the worst time in my years as a supporter when it comes to what I can see in the future. It's a serious worry, I think.
Well, this is the thing. I've always thought that the League One argument, you look at teams that have gone down to League One and bounced back. Southampton did it, but off the back of an exceptional generation of youth players coming through, like Lallana, Oxlade-Chamberlain were coming through as they went down to League One. Reading just don't have that. Leicester managed to do it 1 year, but Leeds, it took them ages. Sunderland, as you say, Portsmouth are still down there, although I'd argue that they're not necessarily naturally a Championship team anyway. You've got to make the right decisions when you go down. And when you say that the decision-making, there is nothing about the ownership that makes me think suddenly being in League One or suddenly having, you know, no players left in the summer makes me think they are going to magically click into making all the right decisions. And it's obvious, you know, from the Liam Moore statement that this is an ownership who has its backs against the wall and has its, you know, is a little bit hawkish in that sense of what it's trying to do at the moment. And yeah, I I think it's difficult from my perspective as well. You know, you've obviously seen more than I have, Wesley, but while I've been supporting the club, this hasn't happened before. I started going in, 2000, 2003, when we were in the playoffs of the Championship. And the worst thing we've done since then was let Zengarevic go in when we got promoted to the Premier League. So even that wasn't, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that was obviously a missed opportunity and everything, but it wasn't, you know, volatile. It wasn't the death knell of the club. We are still here in the Championship and we have competed over, you know, to a somewhat of a degree. So I think it is difficult to really get my head around personally what's, you know, this means for the club. I suppose really results on the pitch at the end of the day are the things that can save us. And we have still got what I consider the saving grace, a lot of the season left to play and a lot of the, you know, good players due to come back. As for next year, I mean, yeah, I can't disagree with what you're saying. A few more questions then. Sam Michael saying, who do you actually think worded that passive-aggressive statement about Liam Moore? Clive Ratton saying, do the club see the fans as customers or an unnecessary distraction? Waldemar Janoszak saying, Liam Moore has 4 minutes come to disagreeing with manager C. Mark Bowen, and he's the captain, for heaven's sake. Imagine the impact on the team and the dressing room that his stance must have. No player is bigger than the club or the manager. Discuss. Now, Matthew Watkins saying, there was a lot of hate for Moore, at least on Twitter. Should the fans and club have a bit more perspective of his overall contribution to the club, even if he has been stealing a living for the last 18 months? I mean, Ollie, on that point, when it comes to kind of no players bigger than the club or whatever, I think that is always a very important thing to remember. We've seen, obviously, managers such as Alex Ferguson would do this almost on an annual basis. They would do these kind of ruthless decisions to, you know, for the betterment of the club and everything. And they tended to work out. But it doesn't feel like we have that sort of people in charge. Do you think that when we say no one is bigger than the club, I think the kind of point for me on that is that you have to have a club in that sense. And I'm not entirely sure what the club is at the moment or what about the club that we're holding on to that is bigger than obviously the fans. But other than that, what exactly is the club about to be bigger than the players and everything like that?
Yeah, I think comparing Vlatko Panovic to Sir Alex Ferguson might be a bit of a stretch. But, you know, obviously he had that authority to do that and he had, you know, everything behind him to do that. So, but yeah, I it is bewildering. I think Wesley made a point earlier that ultimately I think Liam Moore can see the way the club is heading and wants out, and in many ways who can blame him for that. I can't add much more than what's already been said, really. I think things are happening at the moment at Reading that sort of you always used to look at other clubs and it happening there, like points deductions, you know, lots of players out of contract, this whole saga with Liam Moore. These are sort of things that you always looked at other clubs like Leeds, Watford, sometimes, you know, lots of other clubs who sort of had points deductions. You always sort of used to look at that and thought that's never going to happen at Reading because Reading has traditionally sort of always been, you know, this sort of bastion of stability, particularly under Sir John Medeski, always seemed like a club that, yes, was never sort of, you know, going to finish, you know, top five Premier League. Obviously, we became pretty close to that, but it was never going to be a club that was going to, you know, win all these major trophies, but it was always going to be a club that you could be proud of and that was always going to represent the town and its people and the fan base. And it was always going to be something that supporters could be proud of. And now we're at sort of the complete opposite spectrum of that. We are now one of these clubs who other people are looking at and thinking, oh Christ, what's happening at Reading? Like, and you're seeing it now. You're seeing ex-players come out on social media and Jem Carrachan on Radio Berks. We've seen Ian Hart on Twitter, Stephen Hunt on Twitter as well, Jamie Curriton. That shows you that something is up, because these ex-players now are recognising that this is a club that is in serious trouble. And there isn't something we've to cling on to as a club anymore. And I agree that we are reliant really on the owners. And I would fear massively for this football club if Dayong was no longer interested. I think that also plays into the League One argument that it would be an absolute disaster for this football club. And I would almost fear for the existence of this football club if we were going down into League One, least of all because of the financial position. You know, the club is already hundreds of millions of pounds in debt. you know, the owner wants to get into the Premier League. If we go down to League One, you have to seriously question whether he would remain interested. So, it's really difficult. And, you know, there's a question earlier on the other clubs that they've owned, and there are, I suppose, some comparisons. I don't think you can make sort of the blanket statement that just because two of the Dives clubs have gone under, that it's going to happen to Reading as well. I think there are some similarities. I think Beijing Ren, the club in China, that Dai Yong sort of was the majority owner of. They sort of went, I say bust, but I think they failed to sort of register players in time. I think there was just a lack of interest there. The Belgian club, KSV Rosalair, who it was many Dai Ju Lee, sorry, for that one. And that one was a fairly similar situation to Reading, where, you know, too much money was spent and sort of people were appointed and sort of she took advice from a lot of people who, you know, weren't very football orientated. And you're seeing that with Reading, where, you know, you look at someone like Dai Yong Pang, the CEO, who has no previous football experience, has an accounting background. He seems to be more of a yes man for Dai Yong. So, yeah, I'm aware I've gone a bit of a tangent, but it is a very, very worrying state of affairs, isn't it? And it isn't the Reading Football Club that any of us sort of, you know, grew up supporting and grew up loving and something you can be proud of. I think anyone who supports Reading right now can be very, very worried about the future. And that's not to sort of, you know, scaremonger or anything like that. I think it's just trying to face up to the reality of the situation that probably I'm guilty myself of sort of being naive for too long, really, that I almost thought that, oh, things are going to work out okay in the end. You know, we'd lose five games in a row, but ultimately, sort of stability-wise, the club is fine. But really now, you look at everything that's going on, the last couple of weeks have been just horrific, not necessarily on the pitch. Obviously, the results have been bad, but everything that's going on off the pitch too, it's a really, really worrying state of affairs.
There's absolutely no infrastructure, is there? I mean, look down the years when Medeski was in charge, there was an infrastructure. You knew what everyone's job was, and it filtered down, and this was our plan, and this is the way we're going to be. You look at clubs like Southampton, they have good players, they sell them for big money. That's what they do. That keeps them in the Premier League. You know what they're about. With Reading at the moment, you look at them, you think, I don't even know anyone who works at the club anymore. It's just, there's no infrastructure, there's no plan, there's no set way of playing. There's just nothing. There's just nothing at that club now that gives you any joy or pride in, because you look at it and you think they are just, it's kind of a mercenary club now, isn't it? People come in on loan, they're here for 6 months, a year, they disappear. The youth players have been let to go for nothing, your Elises and your Richards. There doesn't seem to be a lot coming through. There's no plan. And when you've got no plan, you've got a big problem. Any businessman who's worth their salt, surely, whatever company you take over, and take football aside, you start at the top, you get a plan, you get the man in at the top to organise everyone as it filters down, and everyone knows where you're going. But at the moment, no one seems to know where the club's going, except for one way, if it carries on the way it is.
Well, this is, that's kind of what I was getting on about when I say the players, no player's bigger than the club, is that when the club is like it is, I'm just not sure what it is that we're holding on to. And with the academy, I mean, that's the thing that we've always pushed back or harked back to. In reality, the academy hasn't really served its purpose in the way that it should in the last sort of 10 years, not because of the academy's fault, but that's probably the ownership, the people who run the club and everything like that. There is just simply no substitute for good management. You can't get away with not having good management if you've got money or whatever. It's just not going to work. We've still got a few more questions, but kind of Ben Thomas saying, is the next week the biggest week in the club's recent history, on and off the field? Mateus saying, has there been a more nondescript week in the history of Reading FC? And John Cope saying, objectively speaking, are Reading's last four results the worst in the club's history? As I think we've gone through all that in the kind of last one, the only thing I'd add is that when it comes to the positivity and everything like that, I kind of feel this myself, is that on the podcast, I don't particularly want to have a podcast that is slating the club, that he's saying he's got to go and all this sort of stuff, and is, you know, waving banners saying Kia out or die out or whatever it is. I don't personally want to run a thing that is about that. We do kind of end up in a bit of a naivety sense deliberately, because we want things to go well and we want to be positive. And how I ended last week's show, like, I wanted Pauno to prove us wrong, and he almost did that at Boa, but ultimately the same odd story happened and it didn't work out. So this is, I think this is the difficulty for us as fans, is that while we do want to be proved wrong and everything, just the reasons to be pessimistic are sadly kind of stacking up, and maybe in the next week they'll go away with a couple of wins, who knows. But RFC later saying, who takes the armbands now? Credits to Bet Tony too, who responded to that saying, we'll need more than armbands to keep us afloat this season, which I thought was good. Quick one then for both of you. If you had to name a captain tomorrow, who would it be?
For me, it'd be Yidam. I think he's been a captain before. He always gives you what he's got. He's a more experienced player. I think it'd be Andy Yidam for me.
Yeah, I'd be in support of Andy Yidam or maybe Josh Laurent, who's obviously taken the armband the last couple of weeks. But I think the frustrating thing is obviously anyone really who you pick is going to be out of contract end of the season. So you're probably going to have a new captain in the summer anyway. So I don't think it matters massively. I think there are, you know, a couple of leaders in that side, as I say, Laurent or Yeardon, possibly Michael Morrison. So, but I don't think it matters hugely necessarily. You know, it's the old adage of, you know, more than one captain on the field. You know, one player's going to wear the armband, but we're going to need several leaders to get us out of where we are at the moment.
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. I will add that hearing Josh Laurent speak to the club after the Boa game, I would actually credit him with clearly being upset about it and upset for the fans, which is probably an argument that we have seen floating around since Paunovic, the rumours of him staying, people saying, oh, the players are out of contract, the manager out of contract, so, you know, we're doomed and everything like that. I don't personally buy into that 100%, because players like Josh Laurent, at the end of the day, if they're out of contract and they play bad, they ain't going to get a good contract in the summer. So they have to play well. If they can keep running up and then leave, they know full well, and Paunovic as well, if he moves on, they all know that a relegation on their CV will significantly harm their career prospects moving forward compared to what it'll be like if they can see off the season well. And I'd probably say Laurent again, Yeardon. I'd agree with everything you said there about having more than one captain on the pitch. Lawyer Royal saying, survival mode, how many points do we need? What are the must-win fixtures and the players we need to get back? I think I wouldn't fall into the trap of saying we kind of need X amount of points at the moment. We just basically need to just keep winning. We've got Luton on Wednesday. Just go and win that game. And ultimately, it doesn't seem like the problems that are kind of haunting Reading over the last few weeks in terms of zonal marking or game management, I don't think they're going to go anywhere. But maybe with players coming back like Zhao and everything, things will find a way of fixing themselves. Mick Day saying it's been a demanding week for Velko and his team. Even so, I'm optimistic. Renamotta's 90 minutes of football plus was a plus, and seeing Lucas Schau for the first time in ages was great. The academy boys have been pretty promising and will improve the team's character. I know that wasn't a question, but do you agree with the point about youth? Seeing young Ethan Bristow pressured the way he was made me think of how much he might benefit from a loan period elsewhere. He may have gone out more if we weren't so short of bodies in left back already, which I think is a point. I mean, Westy, just generally speaking on, is this a time when we kind of want youth players around? Because we've had all season, basically, you know, players who have been all right, first team players, experienced players on loan and everything. Can an injection of youth kind of help Reading at the moment or hinder us?
Well, I think I covered it. I think it's not, there's no good times really. You want to be able to bring your youth players in slowly. And give them 15, 20 minutes in the matches that you're sort of coasting or you're 2-3 up. At the moment, you're hanging them out to dry to a certain extent. Not anyone's fault. I mean, they've got to play just due to the injuries. But Bristow and players that play in defence are going to be put under a lot of pressure, pressure that they won't get in the under-23s or the under-18s. Normally, the plan is for them sort of players at that age to go away, maybe drop into the conference or the bottom league, League Two, get some experience under the belts, play 50, 60 games, and then hopefully they can push for a first-team place. So it concerns me. I know what they're saying. It's nice to have some young local lads playing. But like you said about some of the players leaving, you don't want that on your CV. And I think it's a shame for those players to be playing in what are key positions, getting exposed as badly as they are. I mean, just go to the other side, Tetek. He's had to fill in at right back. I mean, if he makes a mistake, there isn't a person on the ground that would get on his back, because we know that he's not a defender for starters and he's filling in and he's doing the best he can. And they're all, I'm not going to say they're not trying, but it's come way too early in their development. And I think it might have a massive detrimental effect on their on them going forward into their professional careers.
Just to add to that, it's a very young set of academy players the last couple of years, because the club have made this decision to make choices on academy players much earlier in their career. So, you know, where sort of 10, 15 years ago, we'd been seeing 21, 22-year-olds coming into the first team, whereas now this 23 squad is almost solely made up of teenagers. You know, a lot of these players were playing under-18s football last season. You know, Jamari Clark is still, you know, played in the FA Youth Cup last weekend. So that tells you how young he is, because he's still eligible for that competition. You know, Mamadi Kamara turned 18 on New Year's Eve, I think. So this is a very young set of 23 players. So whereas, you know, as say 5-10 years ago, there'd be almost a generation up from them coming into the first team, we're now seeing 18-19-year-olds come into the first team, and they, as Whitty says, they're clearly just not ready in their development yet. But we're stuck in this position where, because of, you know, there are lots of injured players, they are being forced to play. But I think that is worth bearing in mind to an extent, because this is a lot younger players than we are used to seeing coming into the first team from the academy.
Yeah, and that's what we'll see. We've talked about it a lot this season in Newsbites, actually, which we'll get onto in just a second, that under-23s team is one point off the bottom in the league because it's basically the under-18s team. Tyrrell Ashcroft is another one who's played in the first team this year. He's listed on the site as an under-18 player. So we have kind of shuffled everyone up in the age category. If I'm allowed one minor point of optimism, there is always the chance that, you know, being thrown in at the deep end, if they can handle that mentally, then maybe in 3-4 years' time, you'll have someone like Ethan Bristow, for example, or Tyrrell Ashcroft, who'll say, I'm 20 years old now, but I've already got 100 league games on my back. Reading might be in League Two, but at least they'll have had the experience. Maybe there'll be better players for it. I think it is a mental game at that, because as we've said, it can harm them if they don't do very well on their first team, first run outs. Dan Yoss, final question of the week, which we'll move on from actually. He says, what chance are you giving the women's side of a top three finish? That sounds like an excellent introduction into Newsbites.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Unfortunately, the women didn't play this week. Their game at Arsenal was called off. They've got Birmingham at home on the 23rd, 2 p.m. And they have been having actually a really decent season so far. They started off with 4 defeats, but since then 5 wins and a draw. We spoke about the Leicester win last time. Again, go and check out that goal for the 1-0 win, and that was a pretty spectacular one. But the women's team, just showing the way, really, showing the men up. I mean, they established themselves in the Super League with a series of veterans and experienced heads, and now they're kind of, with obviously Fran Kirby, a once-in-a-generation player, helping them get to the Super League, and now they're moving forward with a young set of players and who are, you know, all holding together and really well managed. It sounds so simple, doesn't it, when you put it like that? But that is what the women's team are doing. They deserve massive credit for that. And Birmingham at home, if you want to get down to the Select Car Leeson Stadium on the 23rd, that's Sunday, 2 p.m, their next game. The under-23s defeats, as we've just spoken about, defeats to Sunderland and Newcastle. They've got Norwich tonight, actually, on Monday night. And under-18s, they were defeated in the FA Youth Cup to Man United 3-1 to start off their year. They've got Norwich on the 22nd next. So, yeah, as we've said, it's very difficult to draw too much out of these results for these young players, because they are probably playing players that are about 3-4 years older than them. And when you're 16, that's quite a big gap. Let's talk about, however, some news, some relatively breaking news. Raphael, the goalkeeper, is off. He's agreed to cancel his contract and he's moving to Cruzeiros. I don't think that's 100% confirmed as I speak, but it basically is back in Brazil. Westy, a player who I think since he's been at the... Well, when he arrived at the club, he was an absolute saving grace because we desperately needed a goalkeeper. Came in on a free. Obviously cost a fair bit of money, but generally speaking has been worth that money. And now he's moved off. I think it's probably safe to say now it's all said and done that he was actually a really good signing and B, a very decent player for Reading.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he made a few high-profile mistakes here and there, but who hasn't? I think really, like I say, we needed him at the time. He come in, he's a great shot stopper. I think he's all round, he's been a decent goalkeeper. And to be fair to him, he's done the right thing for himself and the club. He's got himself a move back to Brazil. I think he's getting paid quite nicely for it as well. Hence the contract being ripped up. And I wish him well. Like I say, there's no ill feeling towards him. I think he's been excellent when he's been called upon. It's just a shame that his last game was against Kidderminster.
Yeah, definitely a shame for that. Yeah, well, let's move on then. Let's get through big match preview and discuss what's coming up, because it is a big old week for Reading. There are a couple of home games. And I mean, let's face it, if we lose them, if we win them, those are two very, very different atmospheres we're going to have at the club this time next week, depending on how we do. So let's get into big match preview, talk about that game against Luton.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Now, Ollie, I remember saying on this podcast, actually, that these games being postponed over Christmas might actually do Reading too much harm, because at the time, injuries were quite bad. The form was pretty middling, didn't look too good. But generally speaking, coming into the Christmas period, I was quite happy not to play many games. As it happens, we're now coming into this Luton home game. And Luton are a decent team, don't get me wrong, but they're absolutely still a team that any championship team at home should look at any team that's 13th in the table and say, let's go and win that game. We now come into this massive game off the back of some really quite damaging defeats. What can Reading do to generate some momentum and go and take 3 points against Luton?
Well, it's very easy to say, but I think they just need to, win the game, you know, any means how. You know, it doesn't really matter, you know, whether it comes off someone's arse or whatever. They need to get something into their system to give them a confidence boost. You know, two home games, I suppose, can go one of two ways. You know, you've got these two games at home that I suppose if you're in this sort of position, you would probably rather be playing at home than away, but you have, I'm not quite sure quite what the crowd is going to be, both in numbers and sort of atmosphere-wise on Wednesday and Saturday. I think, to be fair, against Fulham last week, certainly in the first half when Reading was still in the game, I actually thought the crowd were quite good. I think, you know, it was generally pretty supportive of the team. And as I say, you know, some of the things that have gone on the last couple of weeks, particularly coming straight off the back of that Kidderminster result, the crowd could have been quite sour from the off, really. But I think to their credit, I think there was a fair amount of chanting and a fair amount of support, at least until sort of the team on the pitch capitulated. So I think it's got to come from that. I think it has to come from somewhere, and their confidence is probably going to be shot even more after conceding in the 94th minute at the weekend, and it is very difficult. But as you say, you know, Luton, you know, they beat Bournemouth at the weekend, so you know they are a decent side, but ultimately they're a mid-table team, and that's the area of the table that Reading have got to be aiming towards to get away from the relegation zone. So it's difficult for me to sort of be optimistic, I suppose, and you know, given everything that's happened over the last, you know, 2 weeks or so. So I would like to think that they give it a decent go, and I think Fulham, whilst it was terrible, I don't think it was pretty much a one-off in terms of the result and the capitulation, and they did nearly get a point at the weekend against a very good Middlesbrough side. So as long as they're not too heavily affected by sort of that last-minute goal, and you know, we're still not quite sure on what's happening with Andy Carroll. Technically, his contract at the club has ended now. I think it ended yesterday. So whether we'll see him on Wednesday night, I'm not too sure, or whether he's going to, you know, be off somewhere else. So we go into the game with a lot of sort of unanswered questions, which obviously in itself is quite worrying. But I'd like to think that it'll be more of a Middlesbrough performance where it will be a tighter game rather than another complete capitulation against Fulham.
I think one of the dangers for this game is that the crowd's going to be quite low. I would also urge a big reminder for everyone that if you bought tickets for the original Luton game, they do not apply for this one. So I'm sure someone will turn up thinking that they bought tickets for the 150th anniversary game against Luton and therefore can get into this one. If this is a clean slate, the 150th anniversary one's got moved to the Coventry game on 12th of February. So I think this is going to be quite a low crowd. As for how Reading approach it, if Carroll isn't available, which sounds like he isn't, Pavlovic kind of said, just because his contract is up doesn't mean he's leaving the club. Well, it does kind of mean he can't play unless they've got some sort of agreement just to keep it rolling while, I don't know, till the end of January. Maybe there is some sort of agreement there. But Westy, the The question is really, do you throw Lucas Yao in for 90 minutes now, having not really done, you know, any serious game time since he's got back from injury? You look at the bench for Middlesbrough, I doubt we're going to see Clark or Puskas join in. So it's probably going to be basically the same team. But do you go with a potentially unfit Lucas Yao just to get maybe 60, 70 minutes out of him?
I don't think you can. I don't think you can chuck him in. Like you say, he's certainly not going to be match fit for a starters. And if you chuck him in and he gets injured, you probably lost him for the rest of the season. So I think you're going to have to ease him into that first team. You know my thoughts on Joe. I think if Joe plays well, then Reading are a different side. So I'd love to see him back playing 90 minutes, but it could be detrimental to the rest of the season to chuck him in now. I just think we all hope that Carroll sticks around to at least the end of the season. I mean, he's been brilliant since he's been here, and it'd be such a shame to see him go. But essentially, if he's got better offers, then who could blame him for leaving? And going back to Luton, I sat and watched them against QPR a few weeks back, and I thought they lost the game, but I thought they were excellent on the day, especially up front. They're very quick, agile strikers that get around the pitch, and I think they could cause us all sort of problems on Wednesday night. But I would urge, I mean, like you said, Ollie, about Tuesday night, I thought the fans stayed behind them right till the end. Well, say right till the end, till the middle of the second half, when they rightly, some of them turned on them. But I think it's counterproductive to be turning up thinking, let's get on their backs early doors. Some will. They've been doing it for years, so it's not going to be a surprise if they do. But I think for all of us, if you're a supporter, then please support them. If you want to boo at the end, great. I've got no problem with that. Boo them at the end if they haven't put in the effort. But just stick with them because, let's face it, we need them to give everything they got. And we don't want an atmosphere where you've got young players terrified of making mistakes because the crowd's going to get on their back. So just stick with them. I say, you want to boom at the end, go for it. But in the meantime, just give them everything you got and hopefully they give us everything they got.
Yeah, and for me, that boils down to what we were talking about earlier about for Reading fans, for years, we've always been the well-run club or at least a pretty stable club. And we've always been, you know, good, honest players and all that sort of stuff, staying out of controversy. And that comes into the fans as well. And we saw it at Kidderminster. There were kind of flashpoints and everything. And I said that I think we should hold ourselves to a higher standard. And that absolutely goes into how we approach the Luton game as fans. If we're turning up ready to sing Sacked in the Morning at the first goal going in or whatever, then that won't help the team. They will not win that game if you go and get on their back after 1-0 after 5 minutes. You can be annoyed or frustrated or groan or whatever. That's totally natural. But yeah, I do agree that you've just got to give it. And I mean, I went to the West Brom away game not too long ago, and I would actually say that even though that was a pretty desperate performance and not a great game to watch from a Reading perspective, the fans' volume for the entire 90 minutes was some of the best that I've seen while I've been on the road for Reading over the years. The fan base is absolutely, you know, with Club 1871 and everything like that, fully ready to get behind the team. Let's hope that persists. This episode will draw to a close once we have done some predictions. Well, it's been a pretty good week in terms of the prediction league. We've all been very on top of the defeats. Sim got the 2-1 defeat at Boa. The only people who didn't pick up anything, Ollie, sadly, you were optimistic along with Sim for Fulham. Ben was optimistic for Boa, so didn't pick up any points there. Westy, you're still in the lead on 23 points. Ollie and Adam on 19. Handbags, 12. Then myself, Ben and Sim all on 10 points. So Westy as the league leader, what are you going to say for this one?
1-1.
Ollie, where are you going for it?
I've given up being optimistic, so I'll go 2-1 Luton.
Yeah, you know, I actually fancy 2-1 Luton myself. So I think Reading, very potential to get a goal. But yeah, I do think, and I agree with what you're saying about Luton, Westy. I do think they're a decent team on a good run of form. And this is exactly the sort of game that those teams tend to thrive off of. So really, it's been a very good effort by us all, I think, to get through what has been an absolutely cosmic week in Reading FC's history in just over an hour. So thank you very much, guys, for coming on. Thank you, Ollie, as ever.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been quite cathartic. So, yeah, thank you.
Westy, always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure for me. Thank you for your time.
And we will be back next week. We have two huge games for Reading. Just imagine if we go and beat Luton and Huddersfield at home. May not sound like the most amazing achievement a football club has ever done. May not sound like the sort of things that can solve us forever. But ultimately, even amidst all of the drama and all of the mayhem, I'm determined to end on a positive note, and that is the fact that if we can go and win these two games, suddenly everything around the football club, with a week to go in the transfer window, hopefully the Moore situation, the Cowell situation can get sorted out. Urge the club to sort those out, and fully well know that if they don't sort them out, we will not be too happy, and we will call them out on it. But for now, for the end of the show, I'll end with an optimistic message. If Reading can win these next two games and sort themselves out in the transfer market, everything might be seeming a little bit brighter as we head into the spring. Thank you for listening. Come on, your arse.